Thank you very much for an inspiring address. You've been kind enough to take perhaps two or three questions. So I will scan the room and see if an arm is raised or a hand or another gesture. There we are. If you were to stand up, sir, a microphone will come to you. May I remind you that we need a question and take no more than 60 seconds if you can, as will your successor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Give me this wonderful chance to ask a question to our President. Mr. President, I noticed in your speech you mentioned many times about ASEAN centrality. You review the TAC, which your father signed, that showed the bond of ASEAN. I think the ASEAN centrality is very important, but it's not. We cannot take it for granted. It comes actually comes from the ASEAN way, the three principles. First, mutual respect. Second, consensus building. Third, considerate other parties' comfort level. In my words, to put it simply, we can summarize it as three no's. No intervention, and no use of force, and no hyping up hot spots. Only because of these principles strictly followed by ASEAN members and other stakeholders that we have ensured the ASEAN and East Asia at large for a long-lasting peace since the end of the colonial rules in history. So we cherish a lot. I fully agree with you. I support the centrality of ASEAN. And even some professor like Cashel MacBoni, he suggests ASEAN is deserved to award a peace, Nobel Peace Prize. I agree with him.
Thank you very much. I think your question is, do you agree with me? So President Mark,
yes,
please.
My question is, President, in the eyes of the international community, some of your Philippines' behavior in recent days, recent times, it now sounds like you really consider other parties' comfort level, and there is a risk of ruining the regional long-earned, long-lasting peace since the end of the, colonialist history. What's your comments on that? Thank you very much.
Well, I cannot imagine what you must be referring to if the reference or the allusion is to the Philippines somehow tearing apart what we have agreed on with in terms of ASEAN centrality. Quite the contrary. I think if you examine more closely the remarks that I just made, I precisely focus on ASEAN centrality, and that the principles that are laid down that are involved in the concept of ASEAN centrality are some things that we must use to guide us. And if we have been distracted in the past years or so, then it's time for us to return and remember once again what ASEAN was created for. And that is to create an aggregation of nations that have very many common interests, and that can be, and that partnerships within that multilateral organization can help each other and help the region. And so the Philippines still remains true to the principles that were established and upon which ASEAN was born. And I think, as I said, that many of these things we no longer speak of today, but we must, because they are as relevant that today as they ever were, perhaps even more so, because the global situation is a great deal more complicated than it used to be before. I would even go far as to say there is no such thing as a regional issue any longer. We have all experienced the unexpected effects of the war in Ukraine, of the conflict in the Middle East. And all of these, and when we talk about the South China Sea, we have to also remember that the South China Sea is the passageway for half of the world trade. And therefore, the peace and stability of the South China Sea and the freedom of navigation of the South China Sea is a world issue. And that is what I am proposing. I am saying that this is a regional issue, but we must examine and be part of the discussion. We must include all parties in the discussion, because now it is not just ASEAN member states who are stakeholders, and it is quite easy to see that it is in fact the entire world that have become stakeholders in the peace and stability of our region.
Thank you. I'll take one question. Yes, you, sir, with your hand up. If you stand up, it might attract magnetically a microphone towards you. Thank you very much. And immediately after your question, once you've identified yourself, I'll ask a third person for the final question. The president will take both. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John. It's Dimitri Sevastopoulou from the Irish delegation of two people. another small country. President Marcos, I'm going to ask you a very direct question, if you don't mind, which is, if Chinese Coast Guard water cannons killed a Filipino sailor, would that cross a red line? And then can you also give us a sense of what are the actions that would trigger a request from Manila to Washington to invoke the U.S.-Philippines Mutual Defense Treaty? Thank you.
And I will ask as the last question, Justin Bakusal. If you could stand, I know you sought the floor. And if a microphone were to come to you, you're right over there. Thank you. And the president will then answer both questions. Thank you. You're one of our young leaders from ASEAN, so please go ahead.
Magandang gabi, Mr. President. Good evening, Ms. President. My question relates to your vision for the force posture of the Philippines by the end of your term. So the Philippines has always discussed that the defense of our national territory is primarily our responsibility under the unilateral defense plan. So what specific force packages are you eyeing particularly in the next coming years? And what exactly are we to expect after Horizon 3 of the AFP modernization program? Thank you.
Thank you. What the gentleman is referring to, the Horizon 3 acquisition program, is the acquisition program that the department, our Department of National Defense, has just completed. Then we are presently in the process of finding suppliers for all the different requirements that we have to build up our capabilities in the armed forces of the Philippines, and we are hoping that these acts are just a deterrence, and we, as they say, to work for peace, prepare for war, and it is an unfortunate truth. But that is why we have undertaken this long-term, it has been going on for many years now, this long-term plan of increasing the capabilities of our military and our civilians, such as the Coast Guard in the Philippines. To go back to the first question, what would happen if there was an incident that ended up killing a Filipino serviceman, be they a Coast Guard or in the military and part of the Navy? Well, that would certainly increase the level of response. And if by a willful act, a Filipino, not only serviceman, but even a Filipino citizen, if a Filipino citizen is killed by a willful act, that is, I think, very, very close to what we define as an act of war, and therefore we will respond accordingly. And our treaty partners, I believe, also hold that same standard. for when the actions with the joint action will be undertaken in support of any kind, any such incident in the Philippines. We already have suffered injury, but thank God we have not yet gotten to the point where any of our participants, civilian or otherwise, have been killed. But once we get to that point, that is certainly, we would have crossed the Rubicon, certainly crossed the Rubicon. Is that a red line? Almost certainly it's going to be a red line.
Mr. President, you have helped us to set the agenda. You have provoked our thinking. You've spurred us to action. That is the keynote speech that we needed. That is the keynote speech that we got. You have sung for your supper. I think it's time for you to enjoy it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.